You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast, starring the one and only Joe Cam. Celebrating 8 years of news, reviews, flapjacks,
and cave culture.
Tune in or get the fuck out.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
I was good till Purnell fucked shit up, which didn't make it into the show, but it's there now.
How did I mess stuff up? The show's just starting.
Listen, it's 9:18, motherfucker.
Oh, please. We were
you are no longer perfectly punctual, Purnell.
Hey.
Oh, no.
I am punctual. My software is just garbage. Like Microsoft for their piss bucket antics. I'm good.
So as you could tell, Purnell sounds a little different tonight.
Yeah, I swallowed a frog earlier. Sorry, everybody. But I hallucinated a bit, so that'll be a positive at least.
Ooh. Yay. Tim and Chris are here, too, so it's a full party cast. Hi, everyone's
hi,
here.
Hi, party.
Yeah. How's everyone doing?
Kiss my ass. Well, who owns Skype? Is it Microsoft?
Yeah,
Microsoft.
No, that's still there. They can take the blame.
That was right. Damn it. Get it right. Skyping it.
Tons of bitches.
Wait, we're not supposed to agree. You're supposed to be like, no, Purnell, Microsoft has plenty of positive qualities, too.
Like Game Pass.
Yeah.
Game
Pass.
The best deal in gaming.
And how?
We'll be talking about Game Pass on the next episode.
But, oh.
Yeah, a lot of news for Game Pass, a lot of updates coming, but that's for our Thursday episodes.
Yes, yeah. You'll have to wait.
This is Thursday. Just party cast, so it's bullshittery and shenanigans.
I like shenanigans. Shenanishittery is the best.
Shenanishittery.
That's right.
It's like that mayo chup. Have you guys seen that in stores where Heinz has officially mixed ketchup and mayonnaise and they sell it as mayo chup?
Yeah, I never quite got that. I saw it and I was like, well, why would you buy that when you've been mixing it yourself for years? And you can determine the volume of ketchup to mayo. You can determine the ratio yourself.
Mayo, mustard, mayonnaise.
If you think about it, I mean, cocktail sauce is just ketchup and, like, horseradish, and people used to mix that up by themselves.
Yeah, but that is true, but I don't know. I feel like maybe it's because I was, for my whole life, cocktail sauce has always existed, so it was never that thought of buying the separate components. But now, I've existed during the age of take your ketchup and just spork it around your mayo. And then Heinz is like, we can sell it as a separate product. So now you're going to have cats buying a ketchup bottle, a mayo bottle, and a mayo chip bottle. They're buying three things, which they're technically only buying two things. And it's like, why would you do that? You already have the two components that make the mayo chip. Why are you buying a third one?
See, the thing with the mayo chip is that there's spices in it. So not only are you getting ketchup and mayo, but all of your fries taste like they're from Red Robin, and that's fucking awesome to me.
Is the seasoning salt?
I'm good with that.
Seasoning salt, because that's all I bet they put in there.
Oh, man, I haven't been there in forever. I mean, I haven't been anywhere in forever, so.
Yeah, I'm sure Red Robin?
Missing
that but, thing. Yeah, considering I haven't been to any restaurant in over a year, yes.
Red Robin, did you just say what's Red Robin, Cole?
Yes.
It's a restaurant chain. I'm not sure how prevalent they are, but their big deal is unlimited fries, and you can be a cheap bastard and sit there all day eating fries with your one burger and then have them wanting to throw
your bottle of mayo chup.
That's right. And I am that guy who has on multiple occasions said, I wish Red Robin was local for me when I was in high school because they would have never gotten rid of me.
So future generations, you said you were, you grew up, with cocktail sauce being available pre-mixed. Now future generations are not going to understand mixing ketchup and mayonnaise by hand.
Not necessarily, because think of it like this. Cocktail sauce, you said it's ketchup and horseradish, right? But the product is called cocktail sauce. Like, you have to have someone go, Oh, cocktail sauce. What's in cocktail sauce? Oh, see, technically it's when you mix these two things. Mayo chop is in the title.
Like, ooh, so cocktail sauce should be called horse chop.
Yeah, pretty much.
That would chop.
That'll do the trick. It's like, oh, I can just get my own horseradish and my own ketchup. But mayo chop gives the secret away. It's like the secret sauce. It's like, we know what it is. Why would I pay you to make it? I can just mix it my damn stuff with the ingredients that are on the shelf right next to the mayo chop. Literally next to it on the shelf.
Now I really want some fried shrimp with horse chop.
But seriously, like you would go to the store and look at the shelf, and there's mayo chop, and to the left of it is ketchup, and to the right of it is mayonnaise. Like, it is literally on the shelf with its combined product. There's not even work involved in going to get the separate parts.
It's what just about right the there. peanut butter and jelly, and then jelly?
I never understood goober. I never said goober either. Not any damn sense. Like, it's the peanut butter and the jelly in one jar. What if I want to put more peanut butter than jelly on my sandwich? Or the what if is, I want raspberry spread?
The thing is, there's other flavors.
Yes,
mayo chop?
It's not just mayo chop. They have mayo racha, which is mayonnaise and sriracha.
Of course.
Here's the magic. I'm on the computer now. I can look shit up.
They have cranch.
Oh, God. That sounds like a disease without a cure.
It sounds like ranch and crayons.
Hook me up with some of that cranch.
They also have mayo Q and mayo must.
It could be a dance.
Ugh, mayo must.
Get that cranch, y'all. Get that cranch, y'all.
Later, this mayonnaise is a bit musty.
I can just picture that guy singing that song like, break it down, get your cranch, going to bust it in the ass, cranch, cranch. Like, it's a dance. It's so cringe.
Okay, yeah, disappointingly competent is a very good descriptor for our show. Disappointingly competent.
Hey. I don't know what that
circle
means.
Underline.
I don't know what that means, but it's incorrect. One of the mayo chip bottles is blue. That does not bode well for my taste buds.
Ooh.
Why?
It's like the Sonic Blue Curry, which I actually hear is good.
Just messing with your damn head. It's like curry should not be Sonic in any way, whether the chain or the hedgehog. I want none of that near my curry. It should out of here. Hook it up. Oh, my God. See, think about it. It's like someone said, you know, incompetently competent or whatnot. But I had a rental car last week. And while I'm not sure if I couldn't have told this story last week because I only had the car then. So I was driving a rental car, and I haven't listened to the radio and since probably the early 2000s because I never used the radio in my car. So now with this rental, radio's playing. And I got to hear talk show radio hosts talk on the morning radio every day on the way to work because I'm too lazy to change the station. And what I came to realize is all these radio stations that people are listening to on their way to work every morning and they get used to them, it's this shit right here. It's really all it is. It's just a guy gets on and is like, oh, man, I got my coffee. I'm so fucking tired. Well, welcome to WKBGR music that we're playing because the station told us to. I'm your host, Peanut Butter, and this is my co-host, Spamtacular, and we're going to give you the recent biggest hits from, like, 2000 to 2001. We don't know.
It's the latest hard rock and metal. None of that pussy shit. Up next, 21 Pilots.
Yeah, there it is. It's like, that's every show. But then every once in a while, I have like a little anecdote. Like, so, my daughter was watching Sonic the Hedgehog the other day. She said something really funny. What did your daughter say? She said, Sonic's really fast. And I'm thinking, well, his name is Sonic. Why wouldn't he be? And then everyone just laughed for no reason because it's just what they do, even though it wasn't fucking funny. But
I'm right now pawing at my desk looking for like the way to change the station or turn the radio off.
But no one does. They just let it play until they get a chance to win $500 by calling.
Do we have to go back to like the cranch talk? Do we have to go back to that?
Crunch berries.
Welcome to KSML, the cranch.
KSML, the cranch.
Okay, well, I'm sold. I want to listen to this station now. With that flavor.
I guess we know what our next emote is.
Cranch?
Yeah.
The cranch.
A bottle of cranch is our next emote. Oh my god. All right, we got reviews. Should we go to those?
Cranch.
Oh, I guess.
Sure.
I'll take that as a yes. All right, first game to talk about tonight is called Lost Ruins, developed by Altari Games, published by Dangan Entertainment, released May 13th on Steam for $19.99. Lost Ruins is a 2D side-scrolling survival action game where you play as a young girl that is awoken in a strange and foreign place without her memories. Explore a dark and dangerous world, battle hideous monsters, and topple incredible bosses. Brunel, tell us about your time with Lost Ruins.
I'm going to start out by saying that I'm glad that their personal description didn't reference Metroidvania, because I was going to immediately point out that a lot of people will see this game on the store and immediately want to go, this is a Metroidvania game. No, it's
Excuse
not.
Excuse me, that's what I thought by looking at it, and that is not what I sound like.
Well, guys, this is totally a Metroidvania. I saw it. I played it. That's a terrible impression.
Well, it was described as like a survival adventure game or something.
And I think that's an accurate statement there, too, for sure. Like, that, as they described it, is 100% legit for this title. Because the way this works out is, like, you start out, and you kind of start out with, like, no gear, as you'd expect, kind of. And you are almost immediately tasked with this notion of needing to defeat the minions of a woman known as the Dark Lady, so that your memories could come back. And that's pretty much the essence of the story. There's a couple quests you might come across here and there, and of course the ultimate revelation, but for the most part, that is your driving force through the game, is to defeat minions to get your memory back. The controls, however, and the way the gameplay flow works is interesting. So, you find equipment throughout the game, and the equipment comes in a few forms. You have typical weaponry, like swords and axes and like those like farming scythes or whatever, and a couple other things you can come across, various types. And they have various attack powers and stat, projection, like poison damage and bleed damage. Armor in this game you can get. However, armor works a little differently than you would expect in normal games. Like, usually it'd be like a defense stat or whatever, but there are no stats in this game aside from just damage output. So what you actually get with armor items is different perks like 30% bleed resistance or 30% blunt resistance. And initially you can only equip one armor item, but as you defeat bosses and get, you know, kind of like boss rewards, you will start unlocking equipment slots. You can equip two things, like the swimsuit, which removes water lightning damage, which is actually a thing. And in addition with that, you can couple it with like the Amulet of Life, which for the record, you're going to want to use the Amulet of Life, because I'll bring that up in a bit. And then lastly, you get magic spells. Magic spells in this game are just like you'd expect from like a Dark Souls type game. They equip to the bumper buttons, and when you use them, they expend MP. Now, as you're running around this game, a few things to note. One, unlike a lot of games of this type where you can say find like a bonfire or a save point or whatever, any number of things, there are no insta-healing zones. You do not get your magic back, and you do not get your health back through any normal means. So move your ass, get that grass, because that's all you got going for you. Secondly, healing items, be it from the MP or HP variety, sometimes you can get items that will heal you instantly, but for the most part, many of the items you're going to come across are healing over time. So you might say get like a, I don't know, like a bottle. I'm just making this up because I don't remember what the item would be. Like a bottle of seltzer. And the bottle of seltzer will say heals you for 15 hit points over 10 seconds. So over 10 seconds, you'll slowly build up to 15 hit points healed. Same for MP. Now, lastly, in regards to like how like these things work as far as like the flow goes, like combat with your weaponry and the enemies, it's weird in that they were going for a survival element. And in some respects, some might say this is thematically accurate, and others might say this is absolute bullshit, but your character has terrible speed. Like, they move like molasses no matter what. Each weapon has an actual stat that refers to his attack speed as being like slow, slowest, fast, faster, fastest. Even the fastest attack items are dainty slow, which means that you have to be very particular about when and how you strike enemies, because more often than not, the enemies are faster than you. So you're going to die a few times until you get used to things, or until you find the Amulet of Life, which is an equipable item that will heal you for one hit point every second or two, But the trade-off is that it reduces your health point hit points by 40%. So, or your max hit points by 40%. But hey, again, constant healing, it's worth it.
Yeah, I'll take the lower health to have a constant regeneration going on.
And yeah, absolutely. In fact, since getting that, the game became more manageable. Like, it's still tough for me, but it became a lot more manageable to know that I could just like kind of chill out for a second and get my health back if I'm falling apart. And it makes it easier to like learn enemy patterns with less risk, because you can take the hit, survive, run away, heal up, and say, now I know how to fight this guy, instead of having to die and reload. But you're still going to do it a few times, I'm positive of that. I did honestly enjoy my playtime with this game, despite the fact that that attack speed thing did frustrate me, and the fact that the magic in its own... Actually, I guess there are two things worth mentioning still. The magic thing is weird, because since there's no place to ultimately heal your magic, you can only get it back by using expendable items, but you're not going to want to use them particularly because, you know how it is with these games. You always want to feel like you might need the items later. So you'll not want to use magic very often because the magic drains. There is a healing item similar to the amulet that does it for magic, but you got to find that, and that's harder to find than the amulet of life. So you might, if you don't find it, you'll be very hard pressed to want to use your spells. There'll be less tools in your arsenal and more, I guess I got it, I may as well just burn it out and then never use magic again. And while you can buy new gear in the game, like whether it be weapons or armor bits or healing items, an interesting component to this game is that money is hard to come by. And when you come across vending machines, you'll almost always find yourself unable to afford stuff. Now, I'm trying to decide what was intended here, and if developers listening, maybe they can outright write and explain. But one thought I had was that they intended for you to get a lot of items while exploring and then make you face hard choices in what to sell to get the money to get what you need.
Maybe.
Which is something that I don't really see too many games do, but I think it's a cool concept. Now, not to be confused with people saying, well, you find ox testicles and whale shards all over the place, and then you just sell those to a vendor. Well, the point of that is that they had no other purpose but to be sold for money. I'm saying in this game, you're going to sell stuff that have actual purposes. It's just you realize that you need, an MP potion more than another weapon or a grenade or whatever. So it's interesting that that's a thing that they make you think about and waffle over. So that's, to me, that's actually kind of a plus for a survival element game. Like, sell what you're not going to use for stuff you'll want to use more. But with all that, like, basically what I just described there is like as a game that I personally found to be pretty fun. I like the anime art style. I'm okay with the character voices. No one's really talking in the game so much. It's like, eep, erp. That kind
of thing. I think the animation of the pixel art looked really, really good.
It is.
Like, just watching the trailer, like, it looks really, really nice.
It really is. Like, that was honestly what drew me to the game originally. Well, that and the whole Dungeon thing, because those guys strike gold constantly lately. I don't know what's going on there, but keep doing it. But yeah, the animation is really nice. You can even, and the way the animation works with the characters, that you can picture how their motions are when you notice their attacks. So it's like, once you get used to enemies, their animation makes for better tells too, which I think is kind of great. It's just, you will die a lot as you're getting accustomed to like enemy patterns. And again, the fact that they're faster than you, you even get a roll, but I suck at even using the roll half the time in this game. I got better at it with certain enemies, but every once in a while, it's almost like back to square one, getting my ass handed to me, getting run over by a mad boar and a orc with an axe.
Just like high school.
Just like freaking high school. Damn orcs. I don't know how they even got to high school in the first place. They're stupid. Must be those
sports. How many wild boars in the backyard, you know, whatever that meme was.
There were a good number, but at the same time, that's how we
44. Took care
of- there you go. 44 wild boar.
44 wild boar is a song.
I thought it was feral hogs.
Feral hogs! That was, there we go.
There we go.
Thank you.
I was going to let him ride on the boar train, but, you know.
I'm more surprised you haven't said anything about anime chins, Cole.
Come on, man.
Because this game has anime chins.
It does.
What is anime chins? Like, actual
chins? The chins. You see how they're pointy?
Yeah.
I've never noticed, but now I'll probably never not be able to notice.
How do you not notice?
I just don't think about it. I'm just like, anime eyes.
Because not everybody lusts over chins, Cole.
I don't lust over them. I get frustrated by them.
She's like, I didn't choose to lust over them. The lust chose me, okay?
Exactly. Bane of my existence. The lust chose me. Every time I see one, I'm like, somebody failed this art student.
And then it becomes, someone failed this entire art community because apparently it's anime chids.
Because
not just gym chids.
Because, okay, I get it. Like, it's you know, how they're drawn in Japan and stuff, and fine, whatever, so be it. But the problem is that there's a whole collection of teenagers in America who are like, everything looks better with a pointy chin. And it just, like, they take forever to learn actual anatomy and art because...
Well, on the positive, no one's taking...
a fucking pointy chin on everything.
Well, until they start putting belt sanders to their face hoping for the perfect chin. We're okay, at least in that regard. No one's trying to give themselves impossible chin.
Why? Why would you say something like that to encourage the next generation?
Good night,
we're already prone to
a massive uprising of bandsaw chin has taken place across America for reasons we can't explain.
Oh my god!
The game is concerned.
All right. Well, the game is cheaper than a bandsaw. So, $19.99 on Lost Ruins. What do you think?
I can get you a bandsaw for $15.
Now I'm gonna get my copy of Lost Ruin, which I think is an absolute try. I only didn't want to say buy it because, again, this is one of those games where I think some people would see the trailer and think that it is a lot easier and fluid than it actually is. When in reality, you're not going to come into this game and steamroll it. It's going to take some work to get used to. But if you're up to that challenge, even if you find yourself not really digging the narrative, I think the game is a solid time. So, honestly, it's more so close to a buy, really. It's just...
Is it only on PC right now?
So far, yeah.
I think your Switch was getting it, too, eventually.
Probably.
Everything hits the Switch.
I look really cool. It has piqued my interest.
Well, if you do get it, let me know. Because I think you were a Dark Souls guy, weren't you?
Yeah, that's kind of my thing.
Yeah, in that case, then, if you get it, I would like to hear your take.
Kind of a problem.
How's the problem? It makes you, it steals you for harsher things. I don't know.
Well, if you're looking for a more casual experience, the next game to talk about is called Instant Sports Tennis, developed and published by Break First Games, released May 14th on the Switch for $24.99. Fun multiplayer tennis game for all with crazy mini games. Chris, tell us about your time with Instant Sports Tennis.
Bad news. It's actually really hardcore. Basically the Dark Souls of casual tennis games.
Finally, the Dark Souls of casual tennis games.
They're waiting.
The bonfires. They're just spaced too far apart in this one.
Yeah. Bonfire between sets. You gotta go and
collect you could use love, it, but then the game starts over and you have to start fresh.
Oh no. Endless tennis. I would love to play tennis against, like, those giant monsters in, like, the Dark Souls Bloodborne games. No. Now that's a game. Make it happen, modders. Bring me Dark Souls Tennis, please.
Dark Souls Tennis. All right, well, how is Instant Sports Tennis? It is not Dark Souls.
I'm sorry that I've hyped up Dark Souls Tennis so much, and it seems to that's going to overshadow Instant Sports Tennis. But Instant Sports Tennis is... okay, so I love tennis games. I've actually... lately been playing Super Tennis on the Super Nintendo because it's on the well, I bought it recently, but also it's on the online
the service.
And completely F that game. It is so hard. I hate it. Not really, but it is too hard. So, like, you know, having played like everything from like the Virtual Boy Mario's tennis to, like, you know, actual, you know, like, more realistic stuff. And, of course, like, virtual tennis. You know, I play, like, I've had a lot of different things. And what I like in a tennis game is a good, like, pick-up-and-play aspect and, like, a range of difficulty that starts exceedingly easy. And that's actually firmly where this game sits, and I like that. It's got... four different modes when you play it. So, and they're all it's all multiplayer. You've got your career mode, which takes you stage by stage, and every time you beat a new stage and unlock it, it also unlocks a new character. And new characters have stats. I don't know that those stats do anything. Because they all play the same to me. I don't know.
Whoa.
So there's very subtle differences between the characters. And they're, you know, like your default is like this dude named Thomas. And then, you know, you'll unlock, like, I don't know, Craig or something. I don't remember their other names. They very much have like a me vibe going on. Like, you know, the Wii Sports Tennis.
Yeah.
But they kind of have that. Yeah. They kind of feel a little bit like that. And in fact, if you played a lot of that, this might remind you a little bit of it because, you know, it's the court size is fairly small, so like you can pretty much cover it pretty well. Your characters may feel a little bit floaty, and certainly you know, it's not the most realistic, you know.
I find the hit detection is really generous as well. Like, as long as you're kind of close to the ball, you're going to hit it.
That's what I was about to say, is that it feels like it should be hard to play because of how, like, you know, it's a little bit floaty and, like, you know. But you swing at the ball, and if it's somewhere in your zip code, you will hit it. And the only real challenge is if they do like this power lob kind of thing where, you know, if you want to do it, I think it's X or something. And it's one of those kind of short shots that send the sends the ball into like the closer quadrant of the court. For playing a lot of tennis games, I actually don't know any of the terminology.
I was just thinking that. I was like, wow.
I actually don't know.
I feel like you should know this.
No. I skip all of that when it comes to that. Actually, I did used to know it because I've played real tennis before.
You play video game tennis, so you don't have to know what the things are. You just know exactly. You get it within the lines, and it's good.
Yeah. No, I used to know what that stuff was called, but I'm too tired
today.
Service
box? I don't know.
Something. But it sends it to there really fast, but it broadcasts like exactly where the ball's going to go for about a second. So if you can run over there and get that really fast ball, then it will send it back to the opponent much faster. And that's a great way to score runs.
It is called the service box. Yeah.
Sorry, I liked my own joke. So yeah, career mode, it goes stage by stage, and every few stages they break it up to do a mini game. This game has 10 different mini games, and I have not played through them all, but they're different, like, you know, knocking
it,
over.
It all comes down to like aiming at different areas on the court, and
it really does. Yeah. One of them is called James Bomb.
James Bomb Jr.
And then one of them is called Tornado! Exclamation point, and it's just where you're trying to play tennis with a tornado. Anyway, they're actually pretty good mini games, and you can play like through career mode, singles or doubles. So you can get a second player in on that, and then you have a quick game and an exhibition. Now these are very similar. And they're up to four players, so you can have, you know, four people for, you know, a game of doubles. Or 3-1, I don't know. I don't
no,
have,
it's 2-on-2.
I can't have four friends over, so I'm guessing it's doubles. And yeah, quick game just like lets you, if you're playing against a computer, it lets you choose the difficulty, it lets you choose the court type, and then it lets you choose the control mode, and more on that in a second. And then exhibition mode has just like another layer of options. And that's pretty much it. It's just for getting like one game in, but exhibition mode, of course, you can play a much longer game if you choose like a 5-set game or some ludicrous thing like that. But yeah, so there's two different control types in the game. One is where you actually just swing the the Joy-Con, like you were playing Wii tennis. What sport is this? And then there's one where you can actually, like, you know, it's a very simple, like, control scheme of just moving your character around the court and using one button for one type of shot and the other button for the other type of shot.
I like how that's called pro mode.
That's called pro mode.
Yeah. Just standard button controls are pro mode.
It doesn't even show a pro controller for the illustration. It just shows, like, a Joy-Con on its side. Like, they could have showed a pro controller. Come on, guys. Anyway,
no, they're going for the casual, you know, not all casual people are going to have a pro controller. They might not even know pro controllers exist.
Pros.
Yeah.
They're not pros.
The Pro Controller will electrocute them if they try to touch it.
Also, you're it's funny that you're like, well, it's for casual people, so they may not have a Pro Controller, but it's called Pro Mode. No, I'm just kidding. I'm actually not
mad. The game will electrocute them if they try to open it.
Yeah.
Go into Pro Mode at your own risk.
So this game ultimately, it hits the sweet spot of what I love in a casual tennis game. You can eviscerate every opponent on the easy setting, and getting into normal, like, you know, even getting up into the expert part of the career path, like, I was winning more than I was losing, and you can ratchet it up to hard and get a real challenge. So I like that. I like that it's really good on having a range of difficulties. I like the controls because they're very generous. You don't have to like obsess over exactly where to aim. Oh, that's the thing, is that instead of like being in a particular place and like pushing the button in a direction that you want the ball to go, it's more like you can just hold it and then move the stick over and like kind of almost like a golf game, like choose your trajectory. Like you can really, you have to do it fast, but you can do like some good strategy in here. And that's another aspect I like of this that I don't see in the more pro tennis games.
And I have to say, there's only really one thing I don't like about this game.
Okay.
The price tag.
Ooh.
That is my biggest gripe with this game. The fact that it's $25.
I mean,
if this was 15, it would be a home run.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like it would be a tennis.
Exactly. It would be a slam dunk.
A touchdown, yes. A first down. What is that?
It would be goal.
Be a 3 point.
Yeah, it's tough to recommend at the current price tag because, you know, Mario's Tennis is like frequently only $35, and that's gonna be, I said it's Mario's Tennis, that's the Virtual Boy game. Mario Tennis.
Aces.
It's only Mario's Tennis on the Virtual Boy.
That was when he bought tennis.
Yes. It's when he bought a tennis. And that's the one you got to play. Anyway, yeah, like, you know, the Power Aces, Super Mario Tennis, is like not much more than $25. And I'm pretty sure it has, you know, possibly all of this. So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it does give you a lot for what it is. Not too sure about the $25 price tag, but I'm still going to say that if I bought this, and I was like, I want a casual tennis game, this better be a good one for $25. I would actually say, yeah, it is.
Cool. Well, that works for me. I agree that what's there is worth the cost. I just think that the cost is going to be a hurdle a lot of people aren't going to try jumping over.
Yeah.
Trying to get as many sports, completely off base sports references where I can. Just diving in with all of them.
Man.
All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is
Hang on. Breaking news. Oh, this is always so fun when Nintendo drops what's coming to the aforementioned Nintendo Switch Online services.
Ooh, did they just announce them?
They did while we were recording about 45 minutes ago. So let's. Ooh. Let's have a news break real
Son
quick.
I didn't get an email about it yet.
All right, so
we all did that.
The NES side is getting one game because they can only put out one game on that thing now for whatever reason.
Yeah, every 4 months.
Ninja Jamaru Kun.
Oh man, I've been waiting for Ninja Jamaru Kun.
I mean, that did come out in the U.S. That's I always like it when they put. I don't care when if it's a Japanese game and they put it on there, a Japanese only release. Like I'm interested because
I'm not knocking the whether it's fun or not. I just laughed at the name. Like
Jaja Maru Kun. It's just like their freaking Twitter mentions are always a freaking absolute train wreck whenever they do this because you know. Spoiler alert, I'm not going to say the words Earthbound or Super Mario RPG when I talk about the new Super Nintendo offerings, which includes Super Baseball Simulator 1000.
Oh, yeah.
Not a tennis game. Caveman Ninja, also known as Joe and Mac.
Yes.
The game on Super Nintendo is literally called Joe and Mac. I don't know why they would say, I don't know why they'd put that in parentheses, but whatever. Which joins the Joe and Mac 2 is already on there. So now you get the full Joe and Mac Super Nintendo experience. Magical Drop 2.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Magical drop, too. If I didn't purchase three, I'd have been all over that.
Still cool. I don't believe... I don't know if that... Did that come out in the U.S.?
Which one?
Magical Drop 2 on Super Nintendo.
No, only arcade... Only on the OG arcades had them.
Yeah, that's what I thought. That's what I thought. And Spanky's Quest.
Ooh. On Super Nintendo?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so four Super Nintendo games, one NES game, Baseball Simulator, Caveman Ninja, Magical Drop 2, Spanky's Quest, and Ninja Jamaru-kun.
What do you think of that release, Tim, for the $20-$25 yearly cost? What do you think of that lineup for Nintendo Switch Online?
That's fine. I like it when they put, like, because I, you know...
You're supposed to say buy it or try it or die.
Oh, buy it. Yeah, no, you should totally... Yeah, why wouldn't you buy it? It's only like $20 for the online for a year, and you know they drop random games on there. You never know when you'll want to play some random Super Nintendo game. That day was actually today for me on my lunch break. I was like, oh, I'm going to play some random-ass Super Nintendo games.
What game was that?
What random Super Nintendo
game? Mostly Super Punch-Out is what I got into.
A good one.
Nice.
Yeah. But yeah, I was like poking around at a couple other things. I haven't been in there in a while, so I was like, I'll look at a couple things that have hit there recently.
Anyway, next game to talk about is called Fire Ung's Quest, developed and published by Daedalic Entertainment, released May 12th on the Switch for $14.99. Journey into the Stone Age and face the most challenging task of this era, the search for fire. Tim, tell us about Fire Ung's Quest.
All right, this is a game where you are a caveman and you gotta find fire. So you go on a quest to find it. Done. So yeah, your boneheaded caveman lets the fire go out. He had literally one job, and the chief of his tribe is like, you fucking piece of shit. There's no swearing in this game, or language of any sort. I don't know if they'd quite established that yet, but he seemed awfully mad, and I'm just kind of reading his thoughts. So he's like, okay, bro, you got to go find some fire. So the game plays out. This is a point-and-click adventure game. So if you are playing in handheld mode, you will touch the screen. It will not give you a cursor to sweep about the screen to touch things. You have to touch them with your little finger, or big finger, whatever, thumb.
I believe it's touch screen mandatory as well, if I'm reading the store page right.
If you dock it, you can use a Joy-Con. It has a cursor there, like a motion control infrared cursor, but not one that you can just control with an analog stick or whatever. So you can play it docked or in handheld mode, either or. It's kind of cool actually if you play it on the TV, because you just hold the Joy-Con in your hand, like one, you play one-handed, because there's just pointing, and yeah, you know what you can do if you're playing a game one-handed.
I can cook.
Yeah, you can cook. Can
clean.
Yep, you can clean. You could fold laundry one-handed, just ding, ding, ding. You could pet a cat or a dog or whatever else you might have in your house.
Chinchilla,
sure, sounds good. Eat a banana.
We are getting sidetracked.
Could eat a hot dog. I am talking about the game, Joe, and the things you could do while playing it. This sounds like a sales pitch to me. Not every game I can actively play while eating a hot dog. But anyways, yeah, so you could play it with one hand because you just need like your confirm button, and then there is a button that you hold down and it will show you conveniently kind of the points of interest on a screen that you can interact with. The game is broken out into levels, which is nice because it keeps things discrete and contained. It's not like you go and you find some item and then you end up missing the thing right nearby that you need to use it to interact with, and instead you go walking many, many screens away because you missed some small thing. It's like, no, it's every level is just a few screens, so you can't get too lost. The game, you know, will show you what those points of interest are that you can interact with, though. If there's something you can't interact with, your caveman's head will open up and a bird will come out with a big question mark over his head, and then his head will reseal because I think he's kind of dumb. But yeah, so each world level is its little self-contained thing, just a few screens, so you can't get too lost. You just kind of get your lay of the land, walk around, poke at things, and then solve a series of puzzles in order to get a bug in a jar sort of deal is the thing you need to clear the level. It's more of in like a hamster ball, really. There's also like some hidden coins and emblems to find, which you can use to unlock art. The art in this game, I was not looking at specifically the chin, so I don't know if it's up to Cole's standards for
that's what I was just about styles. To ask.
He seems to, I seem to recall he has a very robust caveman chin. So I don't, it's not an anime style, but the game has, it has very nice, drawn characters and environments. Like the animations are very nicely done. It's just like a very nice looking game, overall. Like the characters have a lot of character. They have a lot of expression, because there is no, you know, words in the game. There is no dialogue in the game. Everything is being communicated to you purely on the character's kind of emotion and motions and expressions and how they act and react to things that you kind of need to puzzle out to help clue you in to what is going on. But yeah, that's the game. It's like 10 levels long. It'll probably take you maybe a few hours to get through. It's fun. It doesn't have any kind of a hint system. I don't know how much you'd really need it, just because I feel like it does lead you pretty well. If you're, you know, doing the adventure game thing of like, okay, well, I don't know what to do right now, so I'm just going to take the thing I got most recently and walk up to everything with it and see what happens. So yeah, that's it. That's cool. The game.
Well, 15 yeah. bucks. What is your verdict?
It is certainly a good game. It is certainly worth an exchange of dollars. I will say that when I was looking up to see what the game was, I saw it was on sale on Steam for $1. So I don't know. It might be something you want to wait for a sale for, just to save a few bucks. But it's pretty cool. But yeah, again, yeah, it's, yeah. If you're into point and clicks, like I liked it.
Well, I think this one was on Windows 8 or something like that, an earlier Windows version with achievements. I remember playing it a while ago. So
yeah,
cool to see it on Switch. But that is it for you, Tim. We'll let you get going.
Go nighty night.
Always good having you on chatting. Do you have any final words before we let you go?
Oh yeah, by the way, that was my 200th review.
Was it?
Yes, Fire Ung's Quest. Yes, thank you. I'm sure that's still well behind the three of you, but for my slow but steady pace, that is review number 200.
I mean, that turtle stroke sure did win that race, so I mean, I'll tell you.
Well, you know, you get to, at the end of the day, you get to the big numbers eventually. I guess
exactly.
My 100th review was actually Catherine Full Body, and that was like a year and a half ago, so...
Yeah, but it was Catherine Full Body. Grrr.
Oh yeah, absolutely. No, that was great. Yeah, no, it was like it was sort of like, I don't know, I don't want to like shit on Fire Ung's Quest. Like number 100 for me was like, oh man, it was this great game that I love. It was one of my favorite games when it came out. Like kind of a big game, and then this is just like
Fire Unga Bunga.
Yeah,
it's not as big an anniversary.
No, it's not as just big a game. I was just, but whatever. It's all good.
Well, you know what they say, 300
on in history
is like the diamond era. So that's when you'll get like, you know, diamonds quests sliced and diced or something as your game to review.
Yeah, and you'll live on in legend. Fire Ung's Quest as my 200th review for the SML podcast.
I gotta see what.
Yay!
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet, a color coded spreadsheet, which I actually need to like work on some more, because now that I've been doing this for like how many years? 4 years, almost 5 years.
Ah, damn.
Pretty regularly. Yeah, scrolling down to the bottom of it is annoying. So I need to like break it out by tabs, by year. And
I did it by year, and it helps me. It's a lot easier.
Yeah, I'll set up the formulas accordingly. I just haven't sat down and done it yet.
Wait, yeah, it would have been like smart if I would have kept records of everything from the beginning, but. Nope.
What record would you get?
All the reviews and all the scores.
Yeah, you keep track of reviews, scores.
We already have them.
Just reviewed things.
Well, yeah, you have yours, and Tim has his. But yeah, like,
we'd send you those, and that's Tim down. Chris is going to be like, you know, I've been keeping them too. You didn't want to ask me, though. Thanks.
Chris, do you keep your reviews? You have a spreadsheet of all of yours?
Nope.
Paul, what about you?
I absolutely do not.
Well, you have Jacob.
The funny thing is, he said he was going to do it, so for years I've been sending him the game, who covers it, and what platform. I mean, don't know if he's done anything with it.
I sincerely doubt.
We could just go back through 679 episodes worth of Twitter posts to pile it all together.
There you go.
Of course, that doesn't have the scores in the posts, but
yeah.
I guess we'll just have to go back and listen to 679 episodes worth of the SML podcast.
No, we don't.
Get this valuable, delicious data.
Sounds like homework.
Kill us all.
It was a pain because I didn't start from the beginning. I started like a few dozen reviews in, and then I had to go back and pile it back together. And I was like, oh shit, I forgot I reviewed that. Fuck. And then I know how reviewers, I was like, I'd hear, you know, professional game reviewers and be like, oh, I forgot I played that game. And I'm like, how could you forget you played a game? Now I know.
I say that shit so much.
Yeah, it's because I reviewed like 10 games that October. That's how I forgot. Yep.
The first week of
yeah, exactly.
I stand by this belief, and it's come up recently because like board game reviews, it's the same concept, which is that, you know, people who don't review games tend to like get mad when like a game reviewer will say, well, this game is okay, not great, and they're like, what are you talking about? This is like the best game I've ever played. You're full of shit. Like, you realize how many games
desensitized.
Yes, exactly. It's like you've played so much that even though this game is great for this person, you've played like 25 other ones just like it. Mm-hmm. And you're like, this just plays like those games. It's nothing special. It's fun if this is what you're looking for, but it doesn't make my heart go flutter or anything.
That's why I started saying a lot, well, it's not genre breaking, but it's fine. And I say that in so many reviews, and it's like, I don't want to shit on it, but it's also not something new or fresh or exciting. It just
you have achieved the bar.
Yeah, I don't know. You like put your toe on the line, I guess. Good job.
Are we going back to sports references?
Kind of.
Yeah. And jump it runs the bases, and it slides into home, and then, I don't know, buy it, I guess. Who fucking
what a fumble. Money. What a fumble. Yeah. I think.
Yeah.
That was the extent. I didn't even realize I accidentally made a sports reference. That's how little I know about sports. So
you made a touch goal.
Yeah. I did a sports ball. Yay.
Yay.
Hey.
All right, Tim, we'll let you get going.
Yep.
Bye.
Catch you later, buddy.
All right. Next game to talk about is called Death Crown, developed by Cosmonaut, published by Badland Publishing, released May 13th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $12.99. Death Crown is a minimalist real-time strategy game in a 1-bit style where you will be playing Death herself, commanding her legions of death and punishing humanity's kingdom for its overconfidence. Fernell, tell us about Death Crown.
It's kind of funny. We were literally just talking about games that do something a little differently and kind of stand out. And then the next game I get to review does that thing. So kind of cool, right? Death Crown is a very... I feel like I'm aping this from the Switch store description, but I think it's appropriate. It is a very minimalist art style game. And I think in this case, it does the game a service. It's part of the game's charm. The whole idea behind this game, at least the main mode, is that you are controlling death, like the actual agent of death. And your purpose is to raise and destroy the human kingdom. So how this takes place is you play across a large map, and on that large map there are like small areas where you can have like individual battles. When you go into a battle map, you end up on a field that's kind of like a bunch of hex grids. And it's a very straightforward process. On one end of the hex grid is the enemy fortress, and on the other end is your fortress. And the goal is to attack the opponent's castle 5 times successfully. What the hell is Parnell talking about? Well, we'll get to that. The way that building out and eventually attacking works in this game is that you have 3 structures you can build. Mines, which will increase the amount of revenue you generate for your company. You'll generate money naturally, but you generate more money once you have mines laid out. There are barracks. you place a barrack down, and then you take your cursor and direct it to where you want the soldiers from your barracks to march. You can create convoluted pathways if you want, or you can just make a path that goes right to their destination. And once you build it down, slowly but surely over a period of time, soldiers will be generated from the barracks. They'll walk the pathway, and if they get to the destination uninhibited, they will do one attack damage to that facility, and then the soldier will die. Because apparently these guys have no staying power. They hit once, and they drop out. And then you're hoping that your next guys can make it through. Think of it as like a pulse, like just pulsating down a line, a blood vessel, wherever. And then the last structure you can build is a tower. And what the tower's sole purpose is to attack soldiers walking from barrack to destination. Soldiers that pass each other in route don't attack you. They just like pretty much hang high five or wave to each other and just keep on going. They have one goal, and that's to destroy buildings. To kill the soldiers, though, you need towers. Now, you build these things, and as you build buildings, you expand the reach to which you can build new facilities, hopefully reaching out as far into the field as you can get. Now, certain fields might have things that inhibit that or prevent you from just like expanding ad nauseum. Like, for example, there might be a field where there's like a cube that will just outright blow up your locations if you build them too far out. Sometimes you'll come across locations where you might have a bunch of forests or like field building structures that prevent you from building over that line. But for the most part, you just build out as much as you can and build structures and then destroy your enemies. One primary thing that you can build towards outside of just attacking enemies, though, is like there'll be these like black crystals on the map. And if you can build a facility directly next to it, all matching facility types will get a bit of a power boost as long as you hold control of that diamond. If the opponent builds a structure next to it and you have one next to it, no one gets the benefit until one of those structures is destroyed. So get the plan and jump. Once you finish the stage, you will get a black crystal, and you're allowed to use that black crystal to enhance one of your three structures to make it better. Like the mines will produce more money, or the towers will fire bullets more often, or the barracks will generate enemy soldiers more quickly. And after each upgrade, it costs one more crystal to get the next level upgrade. So the first upgrade you do will cost you one gem, then two, then three, then, oh boy, you get where I'm going with this. Shit don't get cheap. It gets more expensive. It's kind of like the real world. And that's honestly the game. You're pretty much doing this throughout the entire game. There's another mode eventually where you can kind of play the same game from the perspective of humans fighting against monsters. And there's like a few little bits of perks that come across there as far as like how the humans play compared to the Death's character. But for the most part, they play pretty much the same game. But it's a fun game. It's not complicated. It's very fast paced, too.
I think the most important thing to bring up is its visual style as well, because this is not going to be a visual style for everyone.
Oh, yeah, that's what I meant at the beginning. Like, it's a very minimalist visual. But I probably should have clarified that. It's a minimalist style. It's like black and white. None of the character art is detailed. Like, even the cinematic scenes in the game are not very detailed, but it's deliberate. So you'll see it in trailers, but for the most part, don't look at this game expecting a visual masterpiece. Look at it as them trying to go on a different angle for how they want the game to look, because I'll admit the visuals have a certain charm to them, and the music, as gloom and dire as it is actually really good. Like, I ended up putting the title screen music on Rhythm and Pixels last week. Like, nice. I was enamored with the music in this game, and now I am a big fan of the guy named Lightning. It's Lightning broken up into three words somehow, but that's the guy that composed the music for this game, and I am sold. But it's legit. You'll be gloomy and you'll be happy to be gloomy. That's how great it is. But it's an interesting game in that it's not trying to tick any of the usual boxes when you think of RTS or real-time strategy or real-time combat or whatever. But if you give it a chance, it might tick a box you didn't know was in your actual checklist, which is very different, node connecting, death rumbling decimation simulator. I don't know. I made that whole thing up if you can't tell. But the point is, it's a cool game. It's a game I'm glad I was able to play. And How much is it retailing for?
$12.99.
Okay. Some people might find that being a bit too much, and if they do, I understand that. Wait for a sale. But if money is not of particular concern to you and you're just concerned about the experience, I think this is a buy it title. It's, like I said, it's one that you have probably not played anything like before, but for as simple as it is, it's very engaging.
As long as you don't mind a game that visually reminds me of a graphing calculator.
Odyssey. What was that? I think it was an Odyssey. It had old ass like computer system. Like I remember, like had like two colors or whatever. But or Vectrex. There we go. Vectrex.
I have a Vectrex.
There you go. They say there you go. If you like the Vectrex, there you go, baby.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Cardful Planning, developed and published by Walk Home Games, released May 19th on Steam for $7.99. Take the role of a brave little playing card on a card-flipping adventure to save your captured companion, solve puzzles, and outwit enemies with four suit abilities as you make your way through the dungeon. Cole and Chris, both you played this one. Who wants to start?
Boy, don't speak up.
I was playing chicken. Start.
Well, you get to start because you were the one sitting there so quiet.
Oh, I see. Okay, so Cardful Planning is a, I guess you could call it like a single room puzzle game kind of deal. I guess an action puzzle game where, you play a card and it's very like, okay, so back in the day, I used to play this chess game that was on a 3.5 floppy disk. And, you know, on my Windows 3.1 or something. Actually, I played it in DOS. And it was a chess game that it had a, you know, the board, which was, you know, two different colors. And then each of the pieces was just a little square with a letter in it. You know, K for king and, you know, things like that, R for rook. And so, like, this kind of reminded me of that a little bit. Because it's not monochrome, but it's very simplistic, old-looking graphics with a few, like, kind of slightly modern effects. I don't know. Anyways, so if you like stylized.
Death Crown, you'll enjoy the visual style of this one. It's another very old school looking visual style.
Yeah. And so the gameplay takes place essentially on a grid where you play as your card and you're trying to get to you basically are trying to get to a certain square with a certain other card. So if, let's say, your card is a two and, you know, the yellow card at the end of the stage is a four, then you need to find the two that's also in that stage and, you know, flip over it. And then that turns your card into a four and then you can proceed. That's one of the tricks that they pull on you is that, you know, getting the right cards. And sometimes it's like you got a card that's like a minus one or, you know, things like that. And of course, you know, tens go up into Jack and Queen and King, just like playing cards. And so then there's pretty quickly they start introducing like actual enemies, such as like turrets that fire at you like constantly. And so you either have to outrun them, which is usually impossible, or you have to do like the thing in the actual like stage to kind of like block their shots or whatever. Like there are these blocks that you can drag along with you and you can kind of place those strategically or just travel with them. But of course, when you travel with them, your card doesn't flip over and you have to be flipped over in order to pick up another card. And so it becomes this timing puzzle. And I started breezing through all these stages because essentially this is like I had just beaten the Legend of Zelda Oracle twin games. I just beat both of them like the second one like a week ago.
Nice.
And and it's just like those games are full of puzzles like this. So I was kind of like, oh, hey, this is something I kind of recognize from recent times. But you proceed through the stages and eventually you have to fight a boss. And of course, you know, spoiler alert, the bosses are, you know, themed after the suits. And then I guess you get a different card. And the achievements are such, like, this is a Steam game, not a Windows 10 Zetillion or whatever game. So you actually have to beat.
Give it time. It could be.
Yeah, you have to beat the full game to get all of the achievements, because you have to beat the final boss for the last one. But the first one's easy to get because it's die once.
Yeah.
So
nice.
All right, I think I've summarized the
game. How about you tell us about your experience with it?
Yeah, it's pretty simple, straightforward kind of puzzle game. I did struggle with the controls a little bit. It does tell you that you have to use WASD. It is on Steam, so you know, mouse and keyboard it is. But even though it's
Q to drag the blocks.
Yeah, you have to use Q to drag the blocks. It's not an intuitive setup at all. But eventually I figured out that I could also use the arrow keys. Sometimes games will not let the arrow keys work, so I've kind of broke the habit of checking them. I bumped them on accident and they worked, and I went, oh shit, and that made things so much easier.
I didn't even try that. I should have tried that.
Yeah, trying to do everything on WASD and press Q, that shit just wasn't happening. But yeah, once I figured out I could break it up between the two hands and use the arrow keys, it made things a lot easier. I kind of got a little too bold playing the game and was blowing through the levels really quickly. And then I just hit a hard stop and got fucked up.
Difficulty wall.
Yeah. And then I would like to see a little more of a slow incline rather than just a, hey, you're doing great, fuck you. But otherwise, you know, it's not a bad little, you know, time waster. I don't say that as a negative, but, you know, it's just one of those little time wasters. You got a few minutes, you load it up, you play a few levels, and then go on.
Well, it is $8, so what do the two of you say?
I'm going to give it a recommended try it. You know, yeah. Check out the videos and stuff, see if it appeals. Because it's an action game starring playing cards, so it's kind of like, it's already trying to be niche.
Software.
Cool.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with a recommended try it. It's not bad, but it's one of those games that's just like, it's not action-y enough to be an action game that action game players are going to go for, because it relies so much on the puzzle stuff too.
Yeah, but it's too action-y to be straight up puzzle.
Yeah, but it's also not puzzle-y enough to forgive the action aspect of it. So it's kind of like, eh.
A weird balance.
Yeah, it's somewhere in between. It works out for it, but it's definitely an odd, like, who do you recommend a game like this to, you know?
People right. who really like playing cards, but not playing card games.
Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Cosmic Top Secret, developed by Klaus Film in Those Eyes, published by Nakana.io, released May 21st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $9.99. Hi, I'm T. Was my dad a spy during the Cold War? Help me investigate. Our friend Serlina covered this one, wrote in a review. Yes, I'm doing one of hers on a Tuesday. We have so much to cover. But this is what she's got to say. Hey there, SML friends and fam. It's your girl Serlina. And this week I'm reviewing Cosmic Top Secret for the Xbox One. Developed by Klaus Film and published by Nakana.io. Hi guys, love you. Cosmic Top Secret is a visual novel adventure puzzle game that delves into the real life and slightly fabricated events of T, a woman who is trying to figure out if her father was an actual spy during the Cold War. Let's get on with the review. In Cosmic Top Secret, you play as T, a woman who's quite shook about finding out that her mother and father were both involved in the Cold War. I do want to warn you, lovelies, this game is unlike any you've ever played before. It's filled with people who have existed and continue to exist to this day, and facts. These are things that have actually happened in history, and I found it to be ridiculously engulfing. I never thought that I would be so interested in what Denmark was doing in 1967, but thanks to this game, I know some stuff that will serve me very nicely in Trivia Night. T wants to find out more and more and is met with only frustration because her parents are fairly uncooperative due to the secretive nature of their work. As far as they know, everything about their work was classified, and it's up to T to figure out what her parents can and can't say to slake her curiosity. It's a pretty interesting and surprisingly heartwarming story, as we're given many opportunities to look at T's relationship with her parents, as well as her own feelings about situations that she finds herself in. True to an Akana.io game, I definitely found myself getting all emotional from some of the scenes in the game. Let's talk about the graphics. And the graphics are weird but oddly charming. There's just no other way around it. T and all the other characters that you meet are made out of paper, and the world is cardboard cutouts that pop up whenever you get close enough for them to proc. When you get close enough to the characters, they suddenly have big googly eyes. I had a few chuckles backing away from the character models and then approaching them again for the googly eyes. The charming part of this is the cutouts are all pictures of actual people and places. It's silly, but still gives familiarity. The gameplay is this game's weakness. It's mostly visual novel gameplay, but I found the navigation to be incredibly troublesome. You move T as normal, but she turns into a ball and rolls around. What? There's physics in the game, so inclines are harder and declines are easier. T can also jump, but you have very little control with the direction of the jumping. There's also a point in the game where T turns into a paper plane, and it's cute, but controlling that plane was just not very fun. There are many, many items to collect and unlock more of the story, which I enjoy. The main issue is one of the items to collect are called red owls, and they are very, very hard to spot. The game says they glow in the dark, but I can never get them to glow for me. Plus, when you do get close to them, they don't hoot like owls do. They have data processing sounds, which if you don't know what you're listening for, you can easily miss them. As someone who wants to have the full story, these owls are a thorn in my side, but I will collect them all, I promise you. Cosmic Top Secret releases May 21st on Xbox, PS4, Nintendo Switch, and is already available on Steam for $11.99. Should you buy this one, I will give this one a tentative buy it. I say tentative because while this is a visual novel, the real-life history behind it won't be appealing for everyone. I still enjoyed my time with the game, and although it doesn't seem like it at first, it fits in well with Nakana.io's lineup. All right, sounds good. Anyone have any anything to chime in on Cosmic Top Secret?
I don't know what to do.
All right, well, next game is Quantum Replica, developed by On3D Studios, published by P-Cube, released May 14th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $9.99. It's 2084, and the world bows to a ruthless corporate alliance known as the Syndicate. Under the flickering neon lights of an endless metropolis, citizens scratch out a living, fearful of mercenary armies and their faceless masters. Your secrets are buried, bitter and deep secrets that you must find. You play as Alpha, a vigilante with no recollection of your past. For now, this is where it picks up with you. What do you think of Quantum Replica?
I think it's swell.
Aww.
No.
Aww. Well,
but what is this game that is swell? So, the best way I can think of to describe this game is it kind of harkens back to some more like of a retro stealth game in that even though like the descriptions that I read seem to paint this as being like this open world exploration game, what it actually ends up being is more stage focused, where the stages themselves are environments where like, you might be like some winding corridors or like open spaces here and there, but for the most part, you're thrown into an environment, be like a city or a facility or whatnot. And as a result of that, you're kind of then tasked by your overseer to investigate and fulfill a series of missions to progress his overall agenda. So what this will be, for example, is like, hey, your character wakes up. He doesn't know who he is. And the guy's like, do this crap. Which, for the record, I'm gonna just get that out the way too. The narrative is kind of like just leading you by the horse, like giving you a carrot and leading you along just to fulfill a bunch of tasks for a person to progress deeper and deeper into the game to ultimately defeat this syndicate. But aside from that, the guy might say, "Hey, I need you to go over here and do this," which will then give you like a marker on your map because he'll tell you marking on your heads up display now, and then you'll proceed to fulfill that objective, and then the next one, and then the next one until you ultimately complete the stage and move on to the next environment that has multiple objectives. Not to say that's a bad thing; it's fun. I just wanted to clarify that so people didn't think they were exploring like multiple connected environments like Grand Theft Auto or something. Now, the gameplay in general beyond that is actually kind of fun. So as you're moving around, your character is generally attempting to evade detection at all costs. There are syndicate soldiers and drones and the like inhabiting the environment that he's traversing. And if they see him, he's kind of he's not very sturdy. He'll die. He'll go down like a wet floppy sponge. So if you get into a skirmish, you're kind of boned. So your goal is to fight and evade without detection. And how does that work? Well, there are a few things you can do. If you see an enemy, they usually have like a cone of vision around them, whether it's like a flashlight or whatnot. And if they do have one, stay the hell out of it. Don't let them see you. And then if they don't see you, you can kind of sneak up behind them and do one of two things. Either one, snap their neck and kill them, or two, knock them unconscious.
I killed them all.
I honestly did too. Like at first, I thought there was going to be like a morality meter that would factor into this game at some point, but there actually isn't. The only reasons to do one of the following is as follows. If you knock a person unconscious, they will eventually wake up. However, if an enemy soldier walks by and sees them, or a drone sees them, they'll just wake them up. I'm like, hey, dude, you fell asleep on the job. And it's like, okay, cool. However, if a dead person is spotted, the alarm goes off and everyone starts looking for you because clearly someone murdered this guy. He didn't kill himself. The syndicate jobs aren't that bad. He was murdered. So that's why you'll ultimately have to choose. But since you can also drag bodies out of the vision, out of view, at least early on in the game, you'll pretty much want to kill everybody. But later on, there will be definitely moments where there'll be like five guys clustered and you ain't killing squat because you won't have time to hide the body before someone spots it. So you'll be knocking dudes out. But
I think there's also an achievement for beating the game without killing anyone.
Woof. Yeah, that ain't gonna be me. I'm killing. Give me an achievement for killing all of them. Because they brought it on themselves. They're evil syndicate people. Why? Because that guy told me they are. And in addition to like the melee stuff, you also occasionally find ammunition by looting cars, boxes, crates, lockers, whatever is lootable in the stage you're on. So there's lethal ammo and non-lethal ammo. You can guess which does which. But since ammunition is fairly scarce in the game, you won't want to just kind of willy-nilly fling it out there and use it up because, again, it's rare. And there are other items you'll find, too, such as like EMP grenades and like just health kits and regular like grenade weapons and stuff, which will also be of limited supply, so you'll be kind of scrutinizing on how to use that stuff, too. The music in the game, I'm going to be blunt, ain't nothing to write home about. It's fairly atmospheric, nothing special there, but it doesn't drone out the environment. It's kind of fitting for the scene. It's like an average movie soundtrack. It does its job, but you won't remember it once you're done playing the game. And honestly, that is the main crux of the game. Like, it's you will get occasional abilities as well. I love how I kind of just like danced around that part. You'll get other abilities to augment yourself too, like sort of the abilities that will lead into the whole quantum aspect of the game. Like things that are time manipulating, like speed or like speeding yourself up or slowing everything else down. And all those things generally run on like cooldown meters, so you can't overuse them. And once you start getting these new abilities, they'll immediately start adding obstacles and challenges that will require you to use them. So in its own right, the way the game ends up flowing is you'll move forward, you'll fulfill some missions and dodge and evade some guys, you'll get a new ability, but then in exchange, the game will ramp difficulty up a bit by adding more challenges, which will require you to use those abilities to dodge traps or enemies or whatever. Watch and repeat until completion. But again, even though I did say earlier that the story was just kind of like, do what dude says because he says to and your memory's gone, that doesn't mean the gameplay itself is bad. It's actually fun. I like the stealth aspect. The enemies are pretty stupid. I will admit that flat out. Like, you can evade a guy by like, just like running into a door, and they don't know how to open doors. So once you're in the door and it closes, they don't follow generally. So, hi-yo, easy escape route there. But again, it doesn't make the game bad. It's still enjoyable for stealth games, especially because I feel like 2D stealth games aren't the most common thing out there right now. So this could be up your alley if you're a fan of like retro Metal Gear Solid type stuff. And it's not
the best part about it is that it's at a budget price. It's only a $10 game. Like this is something I would normally expect 15, 20 bucks out of.
That's fairly cheap then. Because I didn't know the price. I kind of like that. I go on a lot of these reviews not knowing how much the game costs, specifically because I want to think about it outside of it. But now that I know how much this game costs, yeah, it's an easy recommendation for folks who are like looking for like a stealthy gameplay style. It's not, like I said, the AI is not particularly like ingenious, but it's enough to get you that set that high of accomplishment. Like, oh, I got through that enemy wave without getting spotted once, or, oh, crap, I got spotted 25 times, but I didn't die. That's cool. Good time.
So your official verdict, the 10 bucks?
I actually think it's a buy it game. It's a fun time, and it doesn't overstay its welcome either.
Cool, works for me. All right, next up is Space Commander War and Trade, developed by Homenet Games, published by 7 Levels, released May 13th on Switch for $9.99. Dive into the ultimate single-player space sim with multiple career paths, engaging gameplay mechanics, diversified missions ranging from exciting space battles to an authentic sandbox RPG experience. Chris, tell us about your time with Space Commander War and Trade.
Authentic sandbox experience.
Yep.
So you can like...
Authentic.
So you can dig your horse halfway into a mountain and then propel off of it to get, you know, a big speed boost on a quick load. I have to do a Skyrim reference every
you
time.
You do. It's legal at this point.
Yeah, it's legally obligated. Okay, so Space Commander, whatever it's called, is... Well, that's the thing, is that I think the game is so much better than the title. Because the title, I would so miss that in the eShop. I would be like, eh, you know.
Yeah, it's a fairly generic title. Space Commander, War and Trade.
It's got some people I don't know as the you know, title image or whatever. But no, once you get into this game, this is basically a kind of do what you want space adventure. And it's divided into like different aspects to it that kind of combine, like, I think everybody's favorite things to do in space games. That is to say, well, you know, fighting and trading. And so there's a main quest where, you know, you can kind of follow along these missions, which are usually, you know, dogfighty type missions until, you know, you kind of get up and go up in the world and stuff. But you can also kind of put that on hold and just, you know, if you want to get into the trade part of things, you can like fly from planet to planet, pick up stuff that's rare in one planet, sell it to the other planet, you know, try and earn a whole bunch of money that way. Now, the hang up there is that your fighter ship can't hold cargo. You have to get a cargo ship in order to do that. So you actually do kind of end up customizing your fleet, as it were, because you can purchase multiple ships in this game to, you know, kind of do the job that you need it to do. And the cool thing is you can actually send all of your ships at once on the missions. So you have like, you start with a fighter ship, and then you get a cargo ship, and then maybe like another fighter ship. Well, you can actually, when you fast travel with all of them, if you don't keep one of them docked or something, then you can actually fly in to, like, let's say an enemy ambushes you or pirates or something. You can then take control of one of your fighters, take out the pirates, and then like your other ships are just on AI. So it's kind of cool like that way too, because there's when games have this much going on, it's very hard for me to kind of not get ahead of myself. So anyways, and by the way, this is the way that the gameplay is it's a behind the ship third person kind of shooter, you know, Star Fox style kind of thing. And like, you also have a map where you fast travel everywhere. Like, that's the way that you get around. And when you do, let's say you get to like a space station or something like that, you actually have to like land your ship, which is kind of cool. But of course, they make it they make it pretty much idiot proof. I find that as long as there aren't enemies on the map, I can pretty much run straight into stuff and the game will correct it before I kill myself. However, I did run directly into an enemy ship and killed myself when I was fighting. So
I am proud of you.
Yeah. So that's a kind of cool thing. Like I said, there is a story. There's an ongoing story that you may or may not find yourself paying attention to because the thing that hooks you into this game really is the fact that, like, you know, going from place to place and either choosing missions like that are available or quests or whatever, going to the place and like either destroying enemies or, you know, doing an escort mission or picking up something and taking it somewhere else and doing it all for money so that you can afford your next big ship is really addicting. What this game does so well that even other games that are similar that I've reviewed before didn't do is that they keep it simple. There's two buttons for shooting your guns. You got one and you assign whatever gun to both buttons. You move around with the stick. Of course, you can invert the Y axis.
Yay.
And yeah. And the L2 button, just like not L2, LR or whatever the on the Nintendo. The big squishy one. Yeah.
Whatever the hell it is.
If the enemy gets close enough, you can lock onto them and your character really laser focuses on that enemy. you know, even if they go past you, like it'll turn the ship around and like go find them. So it's really handy for that. And the right stick, all it does is just boost your ship, which, you know, of course costs gas. And when you're shooting your lasers, they also have like a, you know, unless they are limited on ammo, they have infinite ammo with just a cooldown point. And yeah, everything else is just like, it's just right there. Like there's nothing super complicated about controlling your ship or like getting through missions and things like that. Like there's, you know, not like this whole like diplomacy sub game or something like that. And there's not a whole ton of text on screen at the same time. It's just like, this is the game that like you start it and you're like, okay, I get this. And then like, it's 4 hours later and you're like, finally I get my bigger ship. And the ships are so cool. Like the game looks great. And the, like the ship I'm saving up for right now is just covered in guns because nice. I really want the nice fighter ship. And here's the cool thing. And this is where I was getting ahead of myself before. On top of the main quest, there's actually two full other campaigns that you can do. One is another alternate kind of quest line that has you working for a corporation and trying to take over the universe, essentially. I guess it's like Vostok Inc. or something. I didn't get that far into that one because it seemed like it was just more dogfighting and or trading. And the third one is actually kind of an arcade mode because it has you fighting like basically a fleet of enemies and trying to beat your best score. But here's the thing. When you start that game, they give you a ton of money and you can go buy whatever ship you want. So it essentially functions as a way to try out all the ships in the game before you, you know, dedicate yourself to one of them or several of them in the main campaign. So like that was really handy for me, is to just go in and get a nice shopping spree in a whole different other campaign that I didn't have to commit to. So I was really impressed with this one. Actually, I thought that, given the lower price tag, that it might be a little skimpy somewhere, but no.
Yeah, this is another game I was surprised to see it only $9.99. This is something you would expect to see a $20-$30 price tag on, and it's coming in at $10. So what do you say at $10?
I think this one and Instant Tennis should flip prices. This is absolutely a buy it at $10. I mean, if you like behind the ship like type games, if you, you know. And that's the other thing. You can completely ignore trading, and you can mostly ignore combat, like because the cargo ships suck at combat anyway. Like, you know, it can really be the kind of game that you want it to be. And yeah, it's just so fun. Like, it, they really, I couldn't find anything really to complain about in this one.
Cool.
Like I said, you know, I hated fighting with the cargo ships, but you're not supposed to do that, so. that's not anything against the game. They did that on purpose. Yeah, this is absolutely a buy it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Next up is Rift Raccoon, developed by Marcos Game Dev and Rattleika Games, published by East Asia Soft. Released May 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, and PS5 for $4.99. Get ready for intense precision platforming as you take the role of a rascally raccoon named Tucker, who possesses a curious ability, teleportation. Tucker needs your help to find a way home and escape the mysterious robot that won't get off his tail. Haha. Use his claws to climb walls, leap over pitfalls and spikes, teleport through barriers and more across 50 handcrafted levels. Cole, tell us about your time with Rift Raccoon.
I mean, there's not a lot left to talk about. You kind of covered it all there. Also, I'm kind of just like in awe that East Asia Soft and Rattleika were on one game.
They've done a few now.
Have they? Like, yeah. I haven't gotten them lately then.
I think this is
the first one I think I've got where they were the two together.
I think it's more like Rattleika is handling the porting and East Asia Soft is handling the publishing.
Publishing, yeah. I know I've seen Rattleika tweet that they prefer to port, so I'm not particularly surprised. But as far as Rift Raccoon goes, yeah, you play as a little raccoon named Tucker and he's a science experiment and he has the ability to teleport every so often. Otherwise, he just humbles around and like breaks shit. the levels are pretty straightforward. You're just trying to get from A to B. It is a puzzle platformer, so you'll have to climb up walls and jump over spikes. I do have a couple minor beefs. there's stamina involved when climbing up the walls, so you'll tire out. You can't just, like, climb forever. But you can use... Huh?
But you're telling me, man.
But you can use the teleport to shoot yourself back up. My beef is that if you use the teleport to shoot yourself up after you've climbed for a little bit, when you grab back a hold of the wall, if you grab back a hold of it, it's not a guarantee he's going to do it. But if he does, you're still at the same level of stamina drain that you were at before you teleported up. So then you just end up sliding all the way back down, and you wasted your teleport for the moment, and you didn't make it anywhere. On one hand, this kind of leads you to have to be really creative about how you're going to approach some of the puzzles. On the other, it just feels like an extra source of frustration that you don't really need. I could do without the stamina drain for shit like this, particularly because I was playing on an easier difficulty, and I tend to believe that when you're on an easy difficulty, there just shouldn't be stamina drain anyway. That shit needs to go away.
Well, that's the mechanic of the game.
But it doesn't have to be.
But it is.
I mean, that's... the teleporting is, but not the, I slide all the way down. And the other problem is that it didn't seem like it was consistent in how long you could climb. Like, you'd jump on Wooden Wall and you'd be able to climb maybe 8 or 9 blocks worth. But then you jump on the next one and he's like falling down after 3. And you're like, make up your mind. Do you have the stamina for this or not? Like, it just didn't seem consistent. That's my issue with it. Well, that, and I just don't like stamina drain. But if there's not a stamina bar or something, he just would climb and then turn gray and fall down. Turn grayer, and fall down, right? Yeah. It wasn't consistent. Like I said, it led to the puzzles.
Cole is insistent on the fact that it's not consistent.
Yeah. It's basically just feels like a cheap way to shoehorn in a puzzle, is what I'm trying to say. As far as the puzzles go, most of them are fine. There are 50 levels. Some of the later puzzles get really complicated.
I think some of the early levels get complicated. Like, this was a game where I felt the difficulty spikes were a bit too mean.
Yeah. Well, and to go back to the earlier one, there's one early level where you have to, like, teleport between, eventually there's like light bulbs that recharge your teleport ability. Like there's some early levels where you have to hit those in really rapid fire and just good luck.
Yeah, this is it could use with a little more balancing difficulty wise. I just, the mechanic itself, I felt, you know, having to hold the direction and teleporting and not knowing, like you mentioned, with the climbing
either,
if you're going to climb up or if you're going to teleport and immediately drop down, because yeah. I've had that happen too.
Well, and one of the things with the teleporting that gets me the most, some of the puzzles really require you to be way more precise than the game can allow you to be. You can press the button, and sometimes I would have it show like where my teleport, like a little shadow of where the teleport was going to take me, but I couldn't rely on that consistently, and I couldn't control it consistently. Consistency is my word today.
Yeah.
I can tell. But that's how I felt about the game. Like, everything was just like, okay, it's a good idea, but it doesn't fall together in practice.
No.
So, like, you would think, okay. In fact, there was one level where I was making this one very specific series of jumps. The very first time I did it, I cleared it perfectly. I fell like a jackass because that's what I do, and I had to start all over. I then had to do this same area 13 more times because even though I repeated what I was doing, I never made it past it those 13 times. I counted them because I was fucking up so much. Like, I would make the exact same series of button presses because I am horribly habitual with that kind of shit, right? Like, I'm just like, my muscle memory is a thing. And I would hit the buttons at the exact same time, do the exact same jump One time I would teleport and land in the middle of the wall. And if you do that, you're dead. You got to start over. The next time I would teleport and hit the spikes. The next time I would teleport and I would land where I needed to go. And then I would die to another part a little further ahead or the next time, even before I got that far. It was just so random as to whether or not you actually could clear an obstacle.
No. Well, Pernell, do you have any questions? I know you were interested in this one.
I'm just waiting for that verdict because on one hand, though, I am curious, like I'm concerned about the whole like inconsistency regarding the stamina meter, but it actually just makes me want to try to just double confirm it for myself. But like it's if you weren't concerned about that aspect of things, though, I am curious, like what do you like? I guess like when your final verdict comes through, let me know based off of what you're going to say. And also if that particular issue wasn't a thing.
Well, let's not beat around the bush. $5. Cole, Riff Raccoon, what do you say?
I have $5. I'm going to go with a fuck it, why not? I didn't hate the game. I know I'm ragging on it pretty hard, but I had
very hard
mechanical issues involved. But, I mean, I played through it. I played beyond what I needed just for achievements. I got the completion in it. You only have to play a third of the levels to do that. I liked the idea of the mechanics. It kind of felt like if you've played Super Meat Boy Forever and then some of the levels where you have to do the teleporting and stuff, it felt very much like that, but as an entire game and without the endless runner aspect.
Well, so you can turn left and right.
Yeah, yourself. You can go where you want. You're still going to end up stuck in a wall and have to do it over, but you can go where you want. It had its benefits, and I don't want to sound like it didn't. It's just that it needs a little more polish in the process.
Yeah, and if you're still on the fence, I believe it is still on sale for the first week, 2 weeks for $3.99 instead of $4.99.
Yeah, so fuck it, why not? It's definitely one like, hey, I'm trying to knock out the 10,000 quests for Microsoft Rewards, and I need a cheap, easy game. You'd be like, well, there you go. That'll do it. But if you're like, I'm looking for a hardcore 2D puzzle platformer, and you're like,
with sexy results.
All right. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Guards, developed by Battlecruiser Games, published by Dragius Games, released May 21st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $4.99. Four heroes are facing a horde of evil, ultimate abilities, magic artifacts, hero upgrades, and clever tactics. All these will help to defeat the boss. Chris, tell us about your time with Guards.
Okay, well, first off, it's not like I'm particularly good at naming things, right? but Guards, as the title of the game, is I still don't understand it. And also, just like, you know, there's also a game called Guards. Which, and I think there's like even another one that's called Guard something. Anyways, whatever. So this is, I'm going to call it like a bite-sized tactical RPG, which is also actually kind of a roguelite. So here's the way it works. It's very important. And like okay, so the first time I loaded this up, right, it started me in a tutorial fight, and it was explaining all these things to me, and I was just like, I don't want to learn this tonight, and so I closed it for the rest of the day, and then started it up the next day, or I don't know. So there's something, like, sometimes a game mechanic is just like, I was like, why does this have to be complicated? And then, like, I just am not motivated to play it. So I'm going to explain it to you now, because it's very good once you get into it. So your gameplay takes place on a grid, like a tactics game. However, it's just one straight line. It's three blocks up and then several blocks across. So you have four characters that you choose from, I'm going to say it's eight different classes. Yeah, eight different classes. One of which you unlock, or the fourth of which you unlock in the tutorial, and then there's four more that you can unlock through gameplay. through gathering stuff, which we'll get to. Anyways, so you pick your four characters from whichever class, and it drops them in. So because it's a 3x whatever grid, three characters have to be in the front and one character has to be in the back. The way that it works is that enemies appear on the other side and they start moving, depending on the enemy, a block or two at a time towards you every turn. And, you know, when they get up on you and start doing damage, obviously you got to respond in kind. Some characters are short range, some characters are long range. And some characters are, it kind of depends on a certain thing that I'll get to. So your three characters at the front will be attacking the enemies whenever they come up. If it's a short range attacker, they'll attack once the enemy's up on them. But if it's like an archer or something, they'll be attacking the whole time. The person in the back won't be doing anything. But in order to make the turn advance, you have to switch two of the characters of your characters on the board in some way. So you can put one of the characters in the front in that one spot in the back, or you can swap two of them in the front, anything like that. So the way the back and the front works is that when you swap a character to the back, they get a certain amount of HP healed. And so that's how you heal your characters in the game. And then when a character swaps places, there's two things that happen there. It's, you know, the character that goes to the back gets healed. The character that goes to the front immediately activates a special move. And the special move, like, for instance, for the archer, is that they attack every enemy on the screen for a small amount of damage. If it's a witcher character, quote unquote, which is kind of just a like a knight with a silly hat, then they get to use like a special, super powerful, but really short range attack. So like if you replace them, or if you set them from the back to the front and their spot in the front has an enemy right in front of them, they'll basically destroy that enemy. And there's like an artillery, like kind of gunman kind of guy that when he moves to the front, then he fires like a cannon into the enemies and takes out one of them. And so the way that the strategy works is that you have to basically juggle characters from the back to the front or from the front to the front in different ways in order to most efficiently wipe out the enemies that are coming at you. And it's all about like learning these eight different character types because they're all very different. And again, you go like once you defeat a certain amount of enemies, the level is considered complete. Like it's just the levels are battles, like that's all there is. And then it goes to a map and you just go to the next battle. And whenever you do, you gain a certain amount of resources, and those resources carry over back to, you know, if you get killed, you have to start all the stages over, but you keep those resources, and those resources are what you use to both unlock the new characters and upgrade your existing characters. And upgrading them means that they get better moves and better abilities to grow. However, most of the growth occurs in the actual game between stages using gold that you pick up from the fights, which is gold is temporary. You lose it all if you die. So you want to spend it all. And it basically draws three different things. Like you can either make your one character have more health, this other character have more attack, this other character have more powerful special moves, and they each have a corresponding cost. And so it's kind of a random drawing of what you have available to improve. And you can choose more than one if you have the money, but other than that, you have to give it up. So that's the way the game works. So it's all about like moving the characters, you know, back and forth between the back and the front and like improving them in certain ways that is going to get you as far as you can go. And then of course you die and then you upgrade your characters and get even further the next time. It is super hooky. Like, you know, like I said, I was so intimidated by just the fact that I had to know things in order to play this game. But once I got past the tutorial and started actually playing it, I like just keep playing it and playing it and playing it. This game really gets its claws into you. And I really appreciate that about it.
Nice. So $5, your official verdict?
I didn't even know it was that cheap. Yeah, go buy it. It's simplistic. There's no story. But the gameplay is super solid, and I really recommend this one for relaxing on a chair, kind of just play this for a few hours sort of thing.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Made it through.
Yes, we did it. With great zest and vinegar.
With zest and vinegar. That sounds disgusting.
Vinegar is delicious. I don't know what you're talking about.
But zest?
Yeah. Well,
you're not fully clean unless you're zestfully clean.
And how?